Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hello, friends. That was fun while it lasted, wasn't it? Ipswich Town were top of the table, unbeaten, soaring up the league, going to stroll it up by Christmas, and then we hit a bloody great iceberg. Give me strength. Got to pull through here. Luckily, of course, I am joking. I've just been on the phone to the shipyard. HMS Pith, the league, has been fixed, and it's going to sail again starting on Saturday, boys. How good is that?
Is that official?
That's official.
Great.
Absolutely official. Ross, did I just blow out some earphones then?
Yeah. But, it's one of those things.
I get excited. Yeah. This is, of course, the Kings of Anglia podcast. I am Mark Heath, your positive as ever host. And joining me, after an enforced break due to absence and distance, this week is the doctor, the man with a head like a bowling ball and a brain like a doctor. We call him Dr. Stephen Watson.
Hello.
That's very quiet, Ross. There we go. Doctor, how are you, mate?
I'm all right.
Superb.
I'm very well.
And the man who is an ever-present, who has to be here, both for legal reasons and technical. The greatest producer on planet Earth. The man with a great beard, who I found out is a quarter Italian on the walk into the studio. And possibly has friends in the Naples Mafia. Producer Ross.
I thought you knew this.
I did not know this. I'll be a bit more respectful to you now.
Yeah. Because you were in my fine country.
I was, yeah. We'll talk about that in a minute. Boys. There's a lot to talk about today. A lot to talk about. Obviously, things have gone a bit pear-shaped recently. We'll get onto that in a minute. But this is our first catch-up, literally for about 2 weeks, I think. So first of all, apologies for being away for so long. Boys, what have we been up to? I know we've all been up to things, so I just want to have a little brief catch-up. Stuart Watson, I'm going to start with you first, because you've been to Accrington, which obviously was a nice Saturday night. You also went on a spa day, following in Hutchie's footsteps. Hutchie sends his apologies, not here this week, he's away. He's still covering games, he's doing the Ledley King. But Stuart, what have you been up to? So Accrington, obviously, was a night away with Hutchie and Barry and Warren.
Yeah, we had a rare overnight stop for the football because we thought leaving at silly o'clock for a 12 o'clock start on a Sunday was probably a bit too much. So yeah, we tootled up there Saturday afternoon, had a nice little meal somewhere just outside of Burnley.
Did you go straight to bed as soon as you got there?
No, we didn't. We went out. We went out for something to eat.
I thought you'd take the opportunity being a father. Very rarely gets unencumbered sleep.
No, we had a meal which finished about 11 o'clock, had a couple of drinks there, and then ordinarily, at the point where you would kick on, we did go home.
You were sensible.
Yeah.
Outstanding. And also, how was the spa day?
Spa day was good. Went to Dunstan Hall. Had a very nice massage. I've never had a massage before. It's, as I was discussing with you afterwards, it's a strange experience because it's an intimate experience with a stranger, and I don't know how much talking's meant to go on. During this, I think it was about 50 minutes.
Yeah.
What is etiquette?
I don't think there is a set etiquette, obviously, apart from...
thank you.
Yeah.
That's very nice, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you can talk as much as you want, really, but I think most people probably don't.
No, I didn't, but then I didn't know if that was wrong or not.
Yeah. You had a facial, didn't you?
Yes, I did, yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah.
That's a strange thing, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Again, do you open your eyes during that?
Well, in my previous facial experience, I didn't, because I felt very self-conscious, because you open your eyes and then you're basically just looking up someone's nose as they fondle your cheeks.
Yes.
So
that all that all said, I did quite enjoy it.
You enjoyed it. Yeah. Did you have the old sack back and crack as well that you've long been talking about?
I passed on that. I'm saving that for the live pod.
Excellent. Well, that's Stewie caught up with. Roscoe, mm-hmm. You have been on a stag do in Prague with the lads. So just how much damage did you do to our brilliant reputation as Brits Abroad over there?
To be fair, I did all right.
You did all right?
Yeah, I was more damage. Sensible than I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
Maybe being in a relationship more now has changed my view on a lad's holiday. I need to be sort of be careful a little bit.
Yeah.
Because before, when we've been on a lad's holiday together, we've gone a bit extreme and
bit
stuff
mad.
Like that. Yeah, but this time, we're still, strip club and stuff like that.
Standard, of
course. Standard. Drank a lot. Yeah. The groom was basically... like any groom should be, on the floor, dead.
You killed him?
Technically, yes. In terms of a lot of shots, a lot of alcohol consumed. But yeah, it was really good.
Here's a question for me. Prague is a beautiful, beautiful city, full of history and culture.
Yes.
You can go anywhere in this country and get lots of booze and go to a strip club, if you're so minded, with the lads. Why do you need to go to beautiful Europe to do it, where you should probably actually be taking in the culture and the setting?
Well, basically, the best man for the groom, he loves Prague. Like, he goes there actually like for weekends with his missus. So he just went, I want to go there as well to be a lad.
I want to go there and destroy it. Basically. Destroy my reputation.
It's just stereotypical sort of stag do away, and it really, where should we go? Prague or Amsterdam or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't fancy Brighton or, Great Yarmouth or whatever for a stag do. I think, it's better to go abroad.
To be fair, there's a bit more of a ring to Prague, isn't there, than Great Yarmouth. Yeah. Okay, and also, just to keep the listeners, up to speed, driving theory, how's that going?
Yeah, it's going okay.
You took another one, didn't you?
Yeah, I failed.
Yeah, so that's two strikes.
Yeah.
So the next one you're going to hit?
Yeah, of course.
Home run.
Yeah, I've got one answer off.
Yeah.
Passing it.
Oh, so it's inevitable, the next one. When's that?
2 weeks.
Two weeks, superb.
We go again.
Okay. So... once you've done that, all you've got to do is pass your test, which would be no problem at all.
Hopefully.
And you'll have a grand in your back pocket, an extra grand. Superb. Yeah. Boys, obviously being the cultured, learned one of the group, I was in Venice over the weekend, taking in some history. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. I'd highly recommend it to anyone. I'm sure, I don't know if this is unusual, but I have a list on my phone of places we want to go and all that sort of thing. And if you are one of those people, I'd put Venice... pretty much right towards the top. It was absolutely beautiful. You can do it in 3 nights. You can walk everywhere. The people are really friendly. The vibe's really good. And the food is amazing. So I would highly recommend it. Roscoe, somewhere for you to take Sasha, I think. A little romantic.
Go there before it's underwater.
Yes. Well, this is interesting because obviously we did quite a lot of research about Venice when we were out there seeing the sights. And they reckon Venice is going to be a ghost town by 2030 because people are moving out at such a rate. There's nothing for them really there apart from tourism work and sort of maintenance stuff. So they reckon by 2030, the only people who are in Venice will be tourists, which will be very sad. Another interesting fact, gondoliers. How much do you reckon a gondolier earns? That's someone who drives the gondola.
I was wondering, It's a lot.
It is a lot.
Okay. A year?
A year.
What, like 40K?
Gondoliers earn 150 grand a year. 150 grand. And it's one of the most coveted jobs in Venice because they are among the highest paid.
Jeez.
And so every year, hundreds of people apply to be gondoliers and like 3 or 4 get chosen. So you see the gondoliers, you think they're like the gap year students in Cambridge doing punting, and then going off to Kenya to build a well. gondoliers are seriously, seriously respected in Venice as people who earn a lot of money and do a lot of good stuff for the city. There's also only 60,000 people in Venice, which is a few thousand more than Bury St. Edmunds.
Oh, wow.
Which you think would be a lot bigger. Anyway, enough of travels with
Keith
Floyd.
I'm going to go, hopefully, yeah.
Yeah.
there ends your lesson for the day.
That's a lesson for the day. Put your pens down, please, pupils. Let's talk about football. There's a lot to talk about. Stewie, let's reflect, first of all. Let's do it in chronological order, because since we last spoke, there's been a lot happening. Town have played Accrington away and lost, first defeat of the season. And then on Wednesday they played Rotherham and lost again, first home defeat of the season. So for the purpose of dotting the I's and crossing the T's, the chief football writer for the East Anglian Daily Times and the learned doctor, give us your thoughts.
Rubbish.
Hey, there we go. Excellent. Move on.
Not very good on either occasion. Yeah. Accrington. There's a bit of a theme running through both games, but I think that the first game, slight caveat in that there was four key players out. Wilson, Vincent Young, Downs and Norwood. For varying different reasons. I mean, those players all through the spine of the side all bring different attributes to the table that I thought were missing in that performance. Nsiala had a bit of a mare on his return to action. First game, first competitive game since doing his hamstring in pre-season. Booked, gave away the penalty, clumsily, could have gone for that, hauled off at half-time. Dazelle subbed at half-time, didn't do a huge amount to change the narrative surrounding him, and I think there's some mailbag stuff on him, so I won't go into too much detail on that. They missed Norwood's presence and his leadership up front, I thought. They left themselves a huge mountain to climb. They were 2-0 down at half-time, and they never really looked like getting back into it. So that was Accrington, and then it was about, okay, bad day at the office, it happens. Let's see what they're made of in terms of bouncing back. And there wasn't enough of a reaction on Wednesday night. It was similar themes, as I say, sort of running through it. The formation, whether you want to call it wing-backs, whether you want to call it a diamond midfield, it was probably more of the latter. Again, the same Achilles heel, cross after cross coming in from the flanks. For the second game running, a big striker caused them problems. Colby Bishop got the two goals for Accrington. This time it was Matt Crooks who scored both goals. And again, left themselves a mountain to climb. So I don't want to over-egg it in terms of sort of being too down. It's not a crisis. Everything's not suddenly broken. We can't also sweep these last two games under the rug as well. Bit of a reality check, I think it's fair to say.
Absolutely bad. And you punctuated that with a Stewie wink, so you're pleased.
It's not
that.
A wink.
It is a wink. What is it?
It's a tick. I promise you that's not a wink. I think it might be a tick.
No, yeah. Man.
I think it's just a little sort of
you do
tilt
it,
of the head.
I've noticed you do it when you've put together a good sentence. So I assumed it was like
I think it's just a sort of...
Is it?
To show you that I've just finished talking.
Okay.
I don't know what it is.
I like it. You'll see it at the live pod December 14th if you're joining us.
It is what it is.
We should do a counter how many times to do it.
Yeah. Roscoe, you were obviously on your stag in Prague when Town were losing to Accrington.
We didn't watch the game because we were too...
inebriated.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair play. Yeah. But you were there on Wednesday night, pitch side, as you are now.
Yeah.
What did you make of it all?
Got wet.
Yeah? Was that the highlight?
Highlight of the game, basically. Bluey, the horse mascot, he, you know, shook my hand and, you know, just we chilled out for a bit.
Yeah?
We were rubbish, as Tim said. But,
anything particular
wrong.
Stand out for you as particularly
tactics
rubbish?
Tactics all wrong. And half-time would have changed it up a little bit. But the Crooks, he was a big threat, and, of course, he got his two goals. So, it's a shame.
Okay, so Town have lost two games now. They're not going to go through the season unbeaten. Apologies for predicting that or pretty much guaranteeing it. But you should know by now not to listen to anything I say pretty much when it comes to Town. So, Stewie, I've got a question for you. Should we panic?
No.
Right answer.
No, I don't think they should because, as I say, it's not... It wasn't the results that concerned me or worried me most. It was the level of performances. And that, as I said just now, I'm not dismissing that. But I also think, I don't see the wheels completely falling off. I do think they'll bounce back on Saturday. I think Rotherham at home was potentially one of the worst type of fixtures to have off the back of the Accrington game. Because Rotherham are better than their league table suggests. They're starting to find their feet after a summer of change. I thought they were streetwise. I know people don't like the time wasting and the physicality, but that's all part of it.
Yeah.
And they played that side of things very well. So it's perhaps highlighted that the squad depth isn't as good as we were making out, as I and others were making out. Maybe that's the first time that the depth of the squad has truly been tested. It hasn't it hasn't proven to be the case that others can step in. And it's kind of made me realise how big a part Norwood plays and the lack of a presence up front and others. But when everyone's back up to speed and doing okay, I think Ipswich will be fine. I think it's just a little, in a way, it might be a good thing that's just kind of kept everybody grounded, and I think they'll get back on track.
Yeah, I agree. Let's not forget that Town are second in the table with a game in hand. I think, to use a football cliche, if you'd offered us that at the start of the season, we'd have bitten your hand off, wouldn't we? So the obvious and correct answer to that is no, it's not time to panic, which you passed, you. Good work. Next question then, and I think we have obviously already touched a little bit on it, but what has been the difference in these last two games to the start, the brilliant start to the season? Obviously, the players injured were a big thing at Accrington. Has it been a case of teams have started to figure Town out a little bit?
Possibly.
Yeah.
Wednesday night, I thought, I don't know whether it's because Kane Vincent-Young wasn't fully fit, he's missed 3 weeks with that groin injury, or whether there was also he's less of a secret weapon now. You know, Rotherham doubled up on him at times. I think so people maybe know that he's a bit of a weapon for Ipswich now. So there might be the fact that teams are working out how to play against Ipswich. They know about the wing-back system, so we get the ball wide and we use our 2v1 numbers a little bit better. There's an element of that. I think there's an element of a major element of it is been the injuries and four players missing for Accrington, but also Wednesday night equally, I think there was a lot of players out there that were far from fully fit. Hughes and Keane are still nowhere near up to full speed at the moment following their long injuries out. Vincent Young, I touched upon, I don't think he was fully fit. Norwood obviously was only ready for a cameo. And I think perhaps a common denominator here is Flynn Downs, you know, unbeaten for the 11 games and ever present. And they've lost two games that he's not played in. I think they miss a key quality in terms of they had some good footballers in that midfield, but did they have someone that really wanted to bite at heels and be tenacious? And you know, when you play a midfield three, you need to get a really good blend of players. And I think there was too much similarity there on Wednesday night.
How much have they missed Norwood as well? I mean, we've talked on here before about Norwood's goal drought, in inverted commas. Obviously, he's not scored for a little while. But is that, just looking at the goals he scored, that's not taken into account what else he brings to the team, is it? Which is obviously, by the sound of it, what they've been missing in these last couple of games since he's been away. I know he played a little bit on Wednesday night.
Yeah, big time. I think, Jackson and Judge at Accrington? You know, there's no point. It landed the Giants in terms of centre-backs in this league, as we've discussed. And they do still want to go long at times, Ipswich, and that was pointless with those two up front. Similar on Wednesday night. I know Keane is probably seen as more of a proper striker, but I don't see him as a target man. I think Keane's best position would be playing just off. You know, he'd be playing in the hole as more of a number 10. He drops short, he links it up. So, yes, they've massively missed Norwood. Not only his sort of physicality, and he's not a big traditional target man, but he will fight a centre-half and he will create gaps and allow balls to drop loose for others. So, yeah, they've missed him and his leadership as well. You know, he's someone that demands something off of others. And I think you need, yes, Luke Chambers is the captain, but you need leaders throughout the spine of your side. And I think they missed him sort of hollering and shouting and organising people at the top end of the pitch as well.
I think it's mindset as well, isn't it? Like with Norwood and Downs, two guys who've got that kind of physical mindset that are going to really kind of get stuck in and set the example for others to follow. And I guess certainly at Accrington and then under the floodlights on Wednesday with it pissing it down with rain, that's when you really need those sort of people, isn't it, to dig in.
Two fighters, two scrappers, and Ipswich were not only tactically outthought on Wednesday night, but they were outfought Rotherham. Rotherham wanted it a lot more, I thought. Paul Warne was talking about, he asked his players in the changing room before, you know, think of who you want to win this game for tonight. And he held up the name of his dad on a piece of paper who he lost earlier this year, who had died. And he was a massive Norwich supporter. He's from Norfolk and, you know, things like that. And you just wonder if, I'm not saying Ipswich have consciously taken their foot off the gas, but you just wonder if they've fallen into a little bit of a a comfort zone, perhaps thought that it, you know, it was going to be easier than it was. I don't know. There's probably loads of things that have gone into the mix. The lack of momentum with the games being called off for international breaks and things like that. The chopping and changing of personnel and formations. Loads of things have all gone into the mix. But hopefully it just serves as a reminder that this was never going to be the walk in the park that we hoped it might be.
In the office, obviously we hear lots of chat about Town because we have lots of Ipswich Town fans in the office. And I think it was Ollie Sullivan, if you're listening, Ollie, nice working with you, who said something to the effect of, it's the first time I've seen us bullied about the Rotherham game. Is that something you'd agree with, Roscoe, particularly pitch side with Rotherham physically dominating?
Definitely Crooks up front, he really did bully our defence. And our midfield, we just bumped into each other as well. But I think they really bullied, and they were able to target Kane Vincent Young. As Stu said, he's not our secret weapon anymore. They know how he plays, and how we play on the flank. So I think now we've been found out, but I think teams know how to play against us now. And as you know, Stu was saying about Paul Warne, he told his players, you know, who you win this game for, and stuff like that. So they went out there to win, and we were probably thinking, let's try to bounce back from the Accrington game. But you know, we didn't, and out four and out one. We lost. There you go.
That's it summed up. I want to have a little chat about formation, because we've had loads of questions in mailbag about formation, which I thought we'd just bring in. Stewie, you can start to analyse in the doctors. I'm just going to give shout outs to people who've talked formation. Where are we? Here we go. Jack Wiles, I'm not going to ask you all of these questions, but just give a flavour. Jack Wiles says, what system next if 3-5-2 has been sussed out? Kevin Hurst says, when Lambert first came in, he was always playing 4-3-3. Is it worth revisiting that formation? Dylan says, should we go back to 4-3-3 and try Jackson on the wing? Could come narrower to with Sears or Lancaster and have three strikers? And I think it was Joe Fares, he says, scrolling through the comments, who suggested... Luke Ingram just says 4-4 effing 2. That's his formation of choice. We get to Joe Fares. Joe Fares says, what do you think the best formation and personnel is at the moment? I'd go back to the 4-3-3 Lambert started with and play with this team. So his team is obviously Holy in goal, Wolfenden and Chambers, the two central defenders, Garbutt and Vincent Young, the fullbacks, Skous in front of the back four, Downs and Nolan in midfield, George Yu and Jackson up top, wide, and then Norwood as a kind of sole striker. So, Stewie, formations, on you go.
Well, at the press conference this morning, I sort of asked Paul Lambert about that. I think we've seen the Achilles heel of 3-5-2 in the last couple of games, and that is that you can have 2v1 down the flanks. If you've got a fullback supporting a winger, and it just forces Garbutt and Vincent Young back, especially with that sort of narrow diamond in front of them, completely sort of negates your threat down the flanks, and they conceded a lot of crosses. Has it been found out? I've been thinking a little bit about this today. Does the balance of the midfield, if you've got the right balance of midfield, I still think that wing backs can work. I don't like the sort of Skous in a diamond ahead of the, you know, if that had been a proper 3-5-2 with three proper centre backs and Downs in midfield, I don't think we would have had those two results. You know, their best result of the season has come 1-0 at Fleetwood, and that was with wing-backs, and that worked okay that day because, you know, you still had Downs at that stage and you still had three proper centre-backs. So I'm not ready to throw 3-5-2 in the bin at this stage, but I think off the back of these two performances this week, it might be best just to go back to basics, as they say. It depends who's fit, but I think the safest formation for the short term might be to go back to 4-4-2. That's how they kind of settled everything down at the start of the season, with just 4-4-2. And everyone kind of knows their roles in that team a little bit more. But it all depends on who's fit, and we don't know whether Norwood and Downs can kind of pass the fitness test. But I can see merit in all of the different debates that you've just sort of read out there. The one that Joe's come up with, I'm not convinced by Jackson as a wide striker, to be honest. And I know he should have all the attributes to play that because he's lightning quick and he can cross the ball okay. but he's not looked great there in the fits and starts that I've seen. I think he prefers being in a two up front and actually running the channels and dragging centre backs out of positions that they don't want to be. It's going to be very interesting to see what he goes with. You do feel like they need to kind of settle on something now. I don't like this changing from a back three to a back four to a... You can see both sides of the argument with the rotation, can't you? Because I think the rotation keeps people happier, keeps them hungrier, it keeps them sharper in terms of game time.
Yeah.
All good things, but also I think it's not really helping with team chemistry and cohesion and, you know, centre backs knowing where each is going to be, who's sweeping, who's coming out with the ball, who's filling in, you know, all stuff like that just comes with game time, and they're not building that at the moment.
You asked Lambeau about that, didn't you, this morning's press conference about rotation, and he had quite an interesting take on it, saying that you can't expect players who've only played one game to come in and play as well as players who've played 15 games. So it's important from his point of view to make sure that everyone's getting games and feel like they can come in and contribute.
I do get that argument, and I think sort of the idea is that they'll reap the benefits of this towards the end of the season in terms of, you know, if injuries strike then, or, you know, when you're getting to the business end of things, when you need people ready, you're not suddenly parachuting someone in who hasn't played since August, September, and suddenly they're playing in a massive, you know, massive crucial game in April time or something like that. The only counter-argument to that is, you know, he said himself, it's unfair to chuck people in and ask them to perform, having been in the cold. Well, Andre Dizel is constantly sort of judged on that. You know, he's out for 5, 10, 15 games. Chuck him in at Accrington, quite often when there's a load of other changes around him. He didn't perform, then we don't see him again for another 10 games. Has that one game made him any more sharper or ready for things further down the line, or is it... or has it knocked his confidence a little bit more? Arguably the latter. But I can see the argument with both. Just like with the international games thing. Personally, I'd have played the games. But Andy, who's not here today, has kind of made a good argument for playing them.
It's not what you said off air. So it was shit argument. You know what he's talking about.
But we won't know. We won't know till those games are played, until the backlog's caught up, will we?
Yeah.
And it's easy to say in hindsight that Downs has gone away and got injured now and whatnot. But the players that weren't available weren't exactly regulars or ripping it up, were they? So I'd have played it. I think momentum's a big thing, and I think they've passed up a little bit of that.
What has the boy Giorgio got to do to get a chance?
He needs the formation to be not wing-backs for a start. I think he's been a victim of that.
Because this is going on in the background of, on Wednesday night, I was putting together Hutchie's player ratings, which he sent over, reading them all, 4, 5, 4, 5. Giorgio, 7, the only bright spark he referred to. Yeah. And that can be said quite a lot when he plays. So... does he deserve more of a chance? Or Ross, you said that his crosses are terrible.
Yeah, but he's, you know, I think sometimes he's trying to just cut inside himself, because I think he knows he's no one in the box, so it's a bit pointless just cross to no one in the box. But I didn't think it was a bright spark for the first like 10 minutes because we were terrible, but then for the rest of the game it was nowhere to be really seen because we were out of the game really. To be fair, I think he'll start on Saturday.
Do you?
That's my
Stewie. Yeah.
He's got a chance. If he does go for that 4-4-2 back to basics approach, then I think he would be the obvious one to play on the left. Ross is right. I think it can be easier to look good when you come on and there's nothing to lose in a game, and the type of player he is, he can run at people, and you know, you think, oh, it's been so poor tonight. Suddenly you'll get behind anything, and suddenly you play. It's a bit like Dobber at Accrington, who came on. Suddenly someone who runs at people and tries to do something can look good. But we won't know until he starts a game what he's going to be like over the piece of it. He might be one of these hot and cold wingers that has really, really good days and other days where he's a bit quieter. But in answer to your question, he can't have done a lot more than what he's done so far. 7 sub appearances. Might be time for his start now. Against a team like Southend, who are shipping goals, he might decide to put him in.
Okay. What have you got noted down on your pad? Is that a team that you've got there?
Well, when we was doing the sort of formation debate, yeah. which I knew was going to come up, I was sort of writing down the last time they'd played different. The last time they'd played 4-4-2 was the Shrewsbury game, which was the 3-0,
yeah.
which was perhaps a flattering 3-0, but that was a back four that day. No Wilson, so it was Chambers and Wolfenden in defence. Skews and Downs. Skews and Downs has to be, if you're talking about who is. I kind of work my way backwards in terms. I think the managers do this. They start to pen in the players they definitely want to play, and then you fill in the gaps around that. And I think Skews and Downs are nailed on at the moment. I think Chambers is probably their best performing centre back at the moment and is the captain, so he plays. Vincent Young, likewise. Norwood has to play for reasons discussed. I'd say they're the five, and Holy in goal, six. And then it's a case of just sort of filling in the blanks around those, really. So
it's the same as the KO podcast, really, because first name on the team sheet is Ross, because if he's not here, we can't actually do this. And then we just fill in the blanks around him, don't we? That's basically the concept. Very
exactly.
similar. Yeah. We've had some serious football chat there. I think it's time for some nonsense, Roscoe. If you can press that button, and we'll have a big question.
Mark's big question.
It's nice just to hear Hutchie's voice, isn't it? Whenever he's not here, he still feels like he's here. Roscoe, pick a number between 1 and 38.
11.
Oh, it's a good one. Films that have made you cry.
Oh.
I've got a long list. I cry like a baby.
I am terrible, yeah. My missus will turn to me sort of as the credits start to roll and she'll go, are you crying?
You're doing that kind of...
No.
I've got something in my eye.
Just trying to sort of subtly wipe it away.
Yeah. No, I'm a massive softie when it comes, well, to anything really. Yeah. So I've cried at Watership Down. Very sad. I'm sure you agree. Ghost. Seen Ghost? You must have seen Ghost.
Ghost. What's
Come on, Patrick Swayze.
Oh, is that with the
when he's a ghost?
Yeah.
And he's
the pottery.
The famous
scene.
Pottery scene. Yeah. And then he tells her.
I've seen it.
Whoopi Goldberg and all that.
Yeah, yeah. What else have I cried at? I think those are the two that stand out the most as me being. Oh, £9. Have you seen that with
Will Smith? Yeah.
I was completely in bits watching that because the whole concept is that he's been in a car crash where his wife's died. He blames himself for it, and he ends up killing himself and giving people parts of his body so he feels like he's done something good. It sounds terrible, but I found it quite a powerful thing. So that's three right there. But generally speaking, I cry at the drop of a hat. I cry at adverts and stuff like that. I'm a massive, massive softie.
Emotional man.
I'm an emotional man, I am. Yeah. So, boys, what about you?
I struggle to think of the names of them off the top of my head. There was one with Emilia Clarke in. Is it You Before Me? I think?
Yes. Yeah. Someone's disabled, aren't they?
Assisted sort yeah. of suicide, yeah.
yeah.
So, I think that one got me fairly recently. Yeah.
yeah.
I can't name, but I'm on the same as well.
Yeah.
If there's just a scene just about death or just a... It's a the story is about they're going to eventually die at the end. You know it's coming and you just... You are prepared for it, but then I just thought, oh, you just, yeah, you yeah. kind of came out.
Yeah.
yeah.
It's good for you, though, boys.
Yeah.
You should cry. I think there was a quote from someone once who said, if you can have a day where you love, laugh, and cry, that's a pretty good day.
Healthy person.
And I do that all the time, mate, to be honest. So there you go.
I do agree with that, but I also think that the people that have those little signs that say live, laugh, love in their house should get in the sea.
You're absolutely right. I think that's the right. sign of a cretin.
Yeah.
But I think there's definitely something to having a bit of a release of the crying. I cry at adverts, mate.
Should have a little cry now?
I can't force one out now, no. but if you showed me a picture of a dog that was at death's door, I'd be weeping like a baby.
Okay.
That's it as well. Animals. Anything to do with animals, like Supervet, when an animal looks like they're going to die,
yeah.
or anything I see on Twitter about a dog dying, that's it, I'm in bits.
Sasha always brings up something called Dodo. It's like a Facebook page, and it's basically like...
Oh, yes, I've seen this, yeah.
It's basically an animal that's been, you know... been abused or whatever the progression of
it's
how
abused.
It's back
yeah
and it brings it back to be healthy and you just like you actually feel like
yeah I love them things
yeah, yeah.
I retweet them like a mother chuffer so apologies if you follow me
yeah.
good. We've decided that we're all big softies. I'd love to know what Hutch cries at, because Hutchie's a man with not a lot of sort of feelings, it seems. So
it's the Iceman.
He is the Iceman. He's very much on a level the whole time.
He's got feelings.
He has got. Oh, has. I know he's got feelings, but
he just is just cautious who he shares them with.
He's very much a stiff upper lip man, in the finest tradition of British men.
He's a big hearted man.
He is a big hearted man. Let's move on very quickly to talk about something we haven't mentioned football wise before we get on to what was reviewed as simultaneously the best and worst bit of radio ever, The Strike, which I'm sure you're all waiting for. Other news that we've yet to talk about in terms of what's been happening since we've been away. Two other bits of news. James Wilson has signed a new deal, and kind of related, because he used to play for them, Town have got Lincoln City in the FA Cup first round.
I quite at that too.
Oh, boring. Yeah. James Wilson, first of all.
That's not boring.
No, sorry, it's
not
brilliant.
Boring. Have to have like a. This is the point where we need to have like a movie voiceover guy that goes, they played in 2017.
Yeah.
And
carry
then,
on.
And then we'd start doing the. Then we'd run the commentary.
The montage.
Of, Arnold!
Yeah.
1-0! Ipswich are out the cup. Then we'd play a bit of Terry Butcher going mad on BBC One afterwards.
Oh, I've done that.
Back then, it was Championship versus National League. And then we'd build it up like that now.
Yeah, this is brilliant.
And that's so it's not boring.
And you'd have a montage. You'd have a montage of the players training and Town soaring to the top of the league this season, all that sort of
stuff. Luke Chambers sort of in the dressing room, like, I know half of you guys weren't here back then, but that was embarrassing.
Yeah,
I'm not having that again.
Well, we've covered that then, so it's not boring. That draw. That's brilliant.
Okay.
James Wilson, however, signing.
It is boring.
It is boring. James Wilson signing a new deal is very good news indeed, isn't
it? Yes.
He's done very well for himself, hasn't he?
He has done very well for himself, and I did wonder, I did think when Toto Nsiala got the hook at halftime at Accrington, Mr. Wilson's agent might have just been rubbing his hands together, thinking, "I'll stick another zero on the end of those contract negotiations."
Yeah.
We spoke to Wilson this morning, actually, and we said to him, "Sort of, how long has this been in the making? When did the talk start?" And he said, "Only a couple of days ago." So I wonder whether what happened on Saturday might have just sped things up a little bit. But he's been really good, and I think they'd won every league game he'd started up until Wednesday night. So he's pretty. I mean this in a complimentary way. He's sort of a good, just bog standard centre back who knows his limitations, and when the ball needs to go out of touch, it goes out of touch, and he heads it and he kicks it, and he's been a solid addition. I was a little bit surprised it was sort of 18 months, because if they're now sort of having half a mind on planning for a potential promotion, is he a player that you're going to build things around after going up? But I wondered if it would just be an extension to the end of the year, but it's 18 months, and he certainly deserves some sort of new deal with the way he's played.
Good stuff. Right then, let's put it off no longer. It's the highlight and the low light of the show, all at the same time. It's time for The Strike.
Hello and welcome to another edition of The Strike, brought to you by the greatest quiz show host on planet Earth, producer Ross.
Here we go again. They said they wanted to cancel it, but they didn't.
No, it will never be cancelled.
Ratings are up high.
They are indeed.
So this is based around Lambert's 1-year anniversary. Ooh. He's been here for 1 year now. I have to give you credit. It was, you know, you did sort of go, oh, you could do that on the
I suggested it and then completely forgot to put it on the podcast plan to talk about. There you go.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that in a bit, maybe.
So I have got Who Am I?
Who am I?
So Lambert signed 16 players so far in his 1 year in charge. Mm-hmm. So clue number one. He started his career at Cardiff City.
Just to make it clear, this is a player that Lambert has signed.
Yeah, 16 players, yeah. Okay. So clue one. He started his career at Cardiff City and played for them from 2000 to 2005. It's not the greatest clue, but I just thought...
Got to start hard, mate.
Yeah,
on to the next
one.
Okay. He played just 6 games in his short spell at Town.
6 games. No.
Someone. I've gone blank.
Yeah.
If I answer, am I out?
Yeah.
Is that how it works? Yeah. Right, okay, I'll wait for the next
clue, one. Please.
This is basically going to give it away so much. He played in the Premier League with West Ham and Aston Villa.
It's James Collins.
Yes, it is.
He only played, of course he did, yeah, because he was always injured, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was, yeah.
That was a good one. I like that. Good start, Ross.
There you go.
1-0, Stewie.
Multiple choice time. This is where it all goes wrong.
Yeah.
Got your notepads and everything sorted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I have put the right answer in bold, so we have the last time the strike was an absolute fail.
Play along at home.
Play at home, yeah, definitely. Let me know how you get on. So Lambert drew his first game 1-1 with Preston at Portman Road. Who was the first sub that he made?
Oh, Jesus.
The player that he brought on.
Right, okay.
Are we
it's multiple choice.
Yeah, okay.
Kane Jackson, Danny Rowe, Andre Dizel. The big thing is on this, all three were actually substitutes he made.
Oh, great.
So, but which one did he make first?
I'm going to go for Andre Dizel.
Okay.
I think it's Danny. Is it Danny Rowe? Certainly, I remember him having.
No, it's Jackson first. Okay.
No.
Basically, 3 minutes after he brought Rowe on. Jackson
close,
replaced him.
That's what's
3 minutes out.
That's what you think.
I remember Rowe had that sort of dipping volley that Gallagher ended up in goal, and he turned that over the bar, didn't he?
He did. Question two. Lambert won his first game in charge against Wigan thanks to a Freddie's goal, but in what minute did he score?
Can you not think of anything better than minutes?
Minutes, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
67th minute.
68th or 69th?
70th. Or 73rd minute.
Oh, gross.
What is it? 67, 70 or 70 what?
73rd.
70. I'm going to go 70.
Okay.
67.
67.
2-0 Stewie. This is brilliant, isn't it?
How long does it take you to put this together?
About 10 minutes.
Where is that, 11?
Yeah. Third question. Lambert made the loan signing of Conan Quayner in January from Huddersfield. It took him 10 games to score his first goal, but who was it against?
Yes, I know this.
Okay. Reading, Wigan or Nottingham Forest?
It was Wigan.
You've jumped the gun there, my friend. I don't think I know the answer.
I've ruined it.
It was Wigan.
No, it wasn't.
No, it's not Forest.
Was it?
Not his Forest, yeah.
Oh,
one draw. Okay. Alan Judge was a marquee signing from Lambert in January. Against which club did he make his town debut against? Blackburn, Aston Villa or Rotherham? Great stats, this. Thrilling stuff.
Yeah.
Hope you have.
Go on, Steve, you go first.
I don't know. Blackburn.
Okay. I'm saying Rotherham.
Blackburn.
Oh, I'm getting destroyed here.
You've lost.
3-0.
Now, this is last time.
Yeah.
So, Lambert's last visit as a manager to Roots Hall was when he was a Norwich manager. In the game they won. But what was the score? 3-0, 4-1, or 2-0?
4-1.
2-0.
3-0. And there you have it. The strike.
Outro it then.
That's it.
Brilliant. Amazing.
From me, producer Ross.
And there
best
you go.
Presenter in the world.
That is
much.
the best and worst bit of radio you'll hear this week.
Stu, you've won.
Well, but it doesn't actually count, does it?
No, it doesn't, but he's won.
Stu, you wiped the floor with me there.
Yeah.
So, well played.
Hope you enjoyed that.
Right then. That was good. Let's get in. Dive straight in to the mailbag. Who's doing the jingle?
Mailbag, mailbag. It's time for Mark, Ross and Stu to dip into the mailbag. Doot, doot.
A fine effort in lieu of Hutchie's golden vocal cords. Right then, we've already done formation, so we won't talk about that.
Can I just raise one other point on formations?
Yes, of course.
With the talk about 4-3-3, I looked at the last time. The Wimbledon game is kind of held up as the point where they ditched that.
Mm-hmm.
At half time, it wasn't working and they ditched it. I looked at the team for that day and it included. Let me find it now. You had Kenlock, Danasian, I think Dizel played that day. So it probably wasn't, you know, if you were to try that again with different personnel this time around, it's not to say it can't work again. And that's all I have to say on that.
Good. Right then, Harry Smith.
No, El Mazzouni also played in that game as well.
Okay, just get that right. Harry Smith, do you think we'll see Toto do a Donatian-esque disappearing act after his performance at Accrington and Wilson now signing a new contract?
No, I think we'll see him again at some stage, but
in the leasing.com trophy.
Probably not helped his reputation too much with Lambert. Lambert's mentioned on at least two occasions how he wasn't too impressed with how Toto ended up getting a hamstring injury in pre-season.
Mm.
I was there in Germany and he did it just kind of clearing the ball and pulled his hamstring, or tore his hamstring, whatever he did to it. And I think they weren't too impressed that he was picking up a muscle injury that deep into pre-season like that. So I don't think he helped himself in that cause. And he certainly didn't help himself with his performance at the weekend. But he did finish last season really well. And, you know, you were thinking, we talked about the type of centre-backs you get in this league. He's done it in this league.
Mm.
And you're thinking, OK, he's got his limitations, but he should still be a good centre-back for this league. So let's wait until he's back up to speed before we write him off.
You did
That's
it again.
Not a wink.
You seem to do it when you say, like, when you're saying something like, let's wait, let's see. It sort of comes out then. That's my observation.
Just a tick, I think.
Just a tick. Amber Redman has saved me from not actually putting down the Lambert one-year anniversary stuff on the plan by saying three words to sum up the era of the Honey Badger thus far. And then she adds, to get extra points, she adds the emojis Honey Badger as well. Fantastic work. So let's not talk in great deal about Lambert's first year, because I feel like we've talked about that a lot anyway throughout the course of this podcast. But three words to sum up the era of the Honey Badger so far. Mm. I've got three for you. It has turned. What do you think about that?
Like it.
A little wink there. Yeah. Stewie, your three words, please.
I don't know. Top of my head, fans are back.
Nice. Roscoe?
Red card Norwich.
Yes!
Yeah.
That was brilliant, wasn't nice. It?
The birth that of was Honey brilliant. Badger.
Absolutely. That's when Honey Badger was born. Brad just wants to know, can we ditch the Archant advert midway through the podcast and have an extended version of the pod intro music? Because it is simply that good.
All right, let's do it.
Hutchie's brother.
Shout out to Hutchie's brother, yeah.
Yeah, do you want to just drop a little bit in there?
Yeah, why not? We can talk over it, can't we?
Do what we want.
There you go.
It's a banger, to be fair.
It is a banger, absolute banger. And he's finished that with a hashtag, Honey Badger bopping to the intro. Which has got to be the first time that hashtag's ever been used in Twitter history. Fantastic.
Somebody out there must be able to turn that into some sort of dance anthem.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Give it the remix. Kevin Galley says, is the non-stop player rotation creating problems of players not actually playing enough games and partnerships not developing? You kind of touched on that earlier, Stu.
I think so, yeah. I think in certain areas of the pitch, I think at the top end of the field, you can get away with changing things around. But I think certainly in defence, I think the title-winning sides and the best sides, you don't see centre-backs being rotated too often.
Mm.
So that's the area I'd like to see settle down a bit.
FPL Tractor, is Herman Hryderson the world record holder for running while keeping your arms totally straight like a Playmobil character?
Ross, I didn't watch loads of Ipswich of that era. Is that a thing?
Has Herman got a distinctive running style?
I was five when All he right. played.
I can't say as I remember Herman having a particularly distinctive running style, but then I wasn't watching a lot of Ipswich at the time, so it'd be interesting to see how it compares to Miles Kenlock, his noted chicken style. Happy as Barry, a common theme, possession in our half but lacking creativity, confidence and the ability to break down teams in the last third with the ball on the deck. Would you agree with that? So lots of possession in our half,
yes.
lacking creativity.
Yes.
Lacking confidence and the ability to break down teams in the last third.
Last two games, yeah. All of the above. Certainly, I think they've had the majority, the lion's share of possession in both those games, but it's the areas of the pitch that they've had it. And it's when they get into the final third, sometimes it works its way back and then ends up with a long hoik forward still. So,
look who it is. It's Little Melon Man.
Tiny Little Melon Man.
Friend of the show. Morning, chaps, he says. FOTS number 8 here. Twice our own players bumped into one another in midfield on Wednesday, summing a performance of ineptitude amongst strangers. Top marks for the word ineptitude. Suddenly we look like a group of individuals and not a well-drilled team. It's time for a settled 11, surely. And that's exactly what you said earlier in the podcast, isn't it, Stu Pop?
Yeah, we touched on that a few times. There was at least two or three occasions, wasn't there, where I think it was Hughes and... Who else did he crash into?
Nolan,
was it? Yeah. So we're sort of talking about the lack of a sort of a balance in midfield, the players wanting to do similar types of jobs. I'm not adverse to Danny Rowe in the number 10. I think he did quite well for Lincoln there, and he's looked quite lively when he came on in that sort of position for Fleetwood. Hughes is obviously, when he's up to speed, he's going to be a very good player. Nolan, likewise, but they were all just, it was all far too congested, that narrow diamond midfield.
Good to hear from Little Melon Man. Someone close to me was eating melon in the office today. We should explain that Roscoe has a very close relationship with the sandwich man who comes in.
Yeah.
Basically, the sandwich man is Roscoe's dealer, essentially. but he's not peddling narcotics, he's peddling edibles, not edible narcotics.
Flapjacks and
scones, sausage rolls, anything. Anyway, today Ross came back to the desk with a closed bag and proclaimed, I've got some melon. And he'd just been given this melon by... said
the
dealer.
Sort of bag that you get your naan bread in when you get an Indian takeaway.
And the sandwich man does very effectively is kind of wean Ross onto new things and get him hooked. So today it was melon in a bag. How was the melon?
It was really nice, actually.
Yeah.
The new girl who's recently started, she got one as well.
Did she?
Yeah, so, you know, I think it has it, as I said.
It's popular.
Yeah.
Good, excellent. No more said there.
If you were dealing narcotics, doing it as like a travelling... sandwich man
would be perfect.
Yeah,
would be the way to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm not advocating that, but I'm just saying.
Good idea.
Could I have some monster munch pickled onion?
Yeah.
That would be like code, wouldn't it? For
stuff.
An Henry or
give
something.
Me the gear.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, moving on. Chris Anoni says the game. I assume he's talking about Wednesday. Reminded me of last season. A promising start to a game followed by the opponent nullifying our attack. I noticed that the starting front six who were in the squad last season, were in the squad last season, who quickly ran out of ideas when under pressure. And he says, second, the expected goals table, which is a fairly new thing in football, has us down in 12th spot. So would you agree with that? Do Town lack ideas when they're kind of put under pressure?
Possibly, the last couple of games.
We're basing this obviously on the last two games, really, aren't we?
Mm.
Yeah, it goes back to, we've said this, and it's not being smart afterwards now, about, I think we were saying before these two defeats that they weren't exactly absolutely flying and in top form, that they hadn't produced a convincing 90-minute performance. Even the 4-1 against Tranmere, the 3-0 against Shrewsbury was perhaps a little flattering, and goals that had come from moments of individual brilliance rather than real sort of slick team play, and that comes back to this rotation thing. I'm not quite sure. Lambert keeps talking about his principles and the way he wants to play, and we're 1 year into Paul Lambert now, and I still couldn't really define what the Ipswich Town way of playing is. Are they an out-and-out possession side? Are they a counter-attacking side? I think they're a bit of everything at the moment. They'll go long at times, and there's nothing wrong with that, but when he keeps talking about his principles and things, I think he's talking about intensity and taking risks and pressing high and stuff like that. And that's what's been lacking in the last couple of games.
Callum Westley, how come we've raved about our squad depth, but the second we've needed to use that depth, we've looked rubbish? So are we thinking now that maybe this Town squad isn't as deep as we kind of gloated about?
Possibly.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Maybe key areas, maybe.
Yeah.
Just where we haven't got maybe that depth that we thought we
had. So when they're missing players like Downs and Norwood and stuff, there's no one who's going to step in and take that role.
Mm.
Chris Anoni dips back in. Third bite of the cherry, Chris, but I'll allow it because you're a new listener, I think. He says that I thought the main problem was that Rotherham actually played quite well. They kept the pressure on throughout the 90 minutes, and I think they're the first team to do this at home all season. Maybe teams have been scared of Town and sat back too much. So an element of figuring things out. Arthur Pickthorne, King Arthur. Does Dazelle get more stick than he deserves? He sometimes resembles Mesut Ozil, i.e. looks like a hamster with his eyes stuck in a cage, in terms of his body language, but maybe he needs to be given more responsibility and have a run of games in order to reach his potential. Andre Dazelle, what are we saying?
That's a good comparison, the Ozil. Well, I hadn't thought about that. He's, of all the players in football, Ozil seems to split opinion more than most. He's either an absolute world-class creative player that Ronaldo says he couldn't believe that Real Madrid let him go and he made Ronaldo look a better player, and Or then you get the others that just say he looks disinterested lazy. And is, you know, in the big games he doesn't do it and he's lazy. And he, because some players have that sort of languid running style about them, and Andre's always going to have that. You're not, his problem is that some players can hide a bad performance by running around a lot and throwing yourselves into a few tackles. Doesn't mean you've played any better, but you, fans will sort of forgive you a little bit for that. So I do have a lot of sympathy with Andre for the reasons I said earlier, that he's quite often out the game for 5-10 games at a time and then suddenly back in, and then he's meant to be hitting the ground running every time. I just think where he's at and where Ipswich Town are at the moment in terms of progress are just poles apart. They don't suit each other at the moment. Yeah. Andre Dizel, after 2 wasted years, injury and then last year was wasted, is his best place now to develop in League One when Ipswich are trying to scrap their way out? Probably not. So, out of contract next summer, I don't think he'll be rushing to sign anything. They're well stocked in central midfield. There's every chance he could go in January.
They're on different paths. Yeah. Just like Prince Harry and Prince William, as it emerged last
week.
And
he'll look fantastic in an England youth team, or he'd look fantastic in a Premier League youth team setup, and that might give him the platform, the springboard to kick on and be the player we all hoped he would be. But unfortunately, it's looking less likely that will happen at Ipswich, just because they're not suited to each other at this very moment in time.
Roscoe, Andre Dizel, rate or slate?
I'll rate him.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I think he still can do it.
Yeah. Maybe not here, though.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, Mesut Ozil does look like a hamster with his eyes stuck in the bars, doesn't he? Seen that when they try and stick their face out through a thing and it gets all stuck and their eyes stuck? No?
I'm not doing body shaming. No. It's wrong.
Okay. moving on. Nigel G. at ITFC Honey Badger. The man holding the big fish. Could the 2 defeats work in Town's favour? A reality check that they won't always have things their own way. And second, should Honey Badger, hashtag Honey Badger, with the emojis too, a million points, be concerned about the underperforming players? Are the backup players really good enough to step in when needed? We've talked about that. But could it be a good thing, a reality check, that they're not just going to piss the league, as I so stupidly predicted?
Possibly.
Yeah?
Time will tell, won't it?
Exactly that. Time will tell. Paul, people say we need a settled 11, but have we really had a chance to let one bed in? If Norwood's fit on Saturday, will we see pretty much our preferred first choice team? And most interestingly, he says also, beans on toast or cheese on toast?
Beans.
Together?
No, beans. He says that's not an option.
Beans on toast.
Yeah. I think beans, you can have more. Obviously, you've got to worry about the saturated fat and cheese. So. No context, Benjamin. He says my surname is pronounced similarly to Perrier.
Irie.
Benjamin Irie. With you. Benjamin Irie. Oh.
Irie.
Benjamin Irie. I like the sound of that. You're a bit posh, Benjamin, judging by your surname. If you could go back and alter one moment from Ipswich Town's history, what would it be and why?
Relegation.
Would it be? Would that be?
Relegation from the Premier League.
Here's what I'd go back and change. The famous Marcus investment when Town were top of the league.
Mm.
Had he chucked a few million at it, Town could have been in the Premier League. They may never have ended up in League One. I can tell you're not convinced by that argument, though, Stu.
Possibly, yeah.
What would you change then?
I don't know. You can look back at various appointments, appointing Hurst, appointing Roy Keane. Things that you would change. What, if Lambert had won one of those first couple of games that were fine margins, things could have been different. There's so many sliding doors moments, isn't there?
The stands, maybe, rushing into building the new stands, maybe.
I think appointing Roy Keane would have been the one for me, because that was at the start of the Marcus Evans investment, when Ipswich had the money to genuinely compete in the Championship, and it was wasted, and then that moment was gone, and then Mick McCarthy and others kind of paid the price for that, because Marcus at that stage, his clout wasn't as strong as it was because the financial landscape changed, and then better managers than Roy Keane had their hands tied. Mm. So hindsight's a wonderful thing. Everyone was excited when Roy was appointed, but personality-wise, was he ever the right fit for Ipswich Town? Probably not.
Personality-wise, is he the right fit anywhere? Apart from, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Exactly. Matt Lee, good question, Matt. My girlfriend and I have a continual debate. She thinks a sandwich can be one slice of bread folded. I think it's two slices of bread. Can I leave you three with the deciding votes? Well, for me, Matt, I agree with your girlfriend. Of course a sandwich can be just one slice of bread folded. Stu, you're shaking your head.
No, and I'm glad you. I have this exact same debate with my wife, who she'll go, do you want a sandwich? And then she'll say, do you want one or two? And then we always have this argument that one sandwich is two slices of bread together.
Yeah, but you can still have a sandwich. If you're running low on bread, for example, you can...
I'd call that a round of sandwiches. Is that a round of sandwiches? Yeah, that's, is that quite a...
I thought a round of sandwiches was just like people having sandwiches.
No, well...
It's like a round of bread. You know how much, you know, a round of bread you want. That's a phrase.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
It's a thing.
No, I've heard of it. Okay. But if you said, let's have a round of sandwiches, I would see that as us all having a sandwich. Okay. That would be one round.
Anyway.
Yeah.
No, that's half a sandwich. If you're folding the
piece
of bread.
Okay, so I'm saying yes, you're saying no. It is you with the deciding vote, Roscoe. Can a sandwich just be one slice of bread folded over?
No.
Oh, you built the tension there. So, Matt, you win. Well done, my friend. High fives.
With you, Matt.
You win over your girlfriend.
And just to add some advice, you probably just need to divorce. Are they married?
Another girlfriend. Okay. This is your advice for everything.
Yeah,
just
everything
divorce.
Now. Just
split
get,
up.
Get rid. Yeah.
Yeah. If you've got a problem, Matt, leave your girlfriend. All right? Zach Ward. Do you think these international break postponements are hindering us and have the potential to hinder us later on in the season with the backlog of games? If you're winning, I think you need to keep that momentum going, although Downs has evidently been a miss for us. See, we've already talked about that. You agree?
I agree, and I said that before these two games, so I have to stick to that.
You have. You've always said that. Andy Warren disagrees. Matt Thomas, friend of the show.
Number five, I think he is.
Are we really playing so many games that we need mass rotation? Four league games in September, four in October. Sure, rotating the cup, but not so much in the league. We may have been winning, but we weren't looking fluid.
I think it's like the rotation is less about people. You hear the old pros going, we played 60 plus games a year, every year back in the day, and there was one sub or no subs, and they've got more sports science than ever before and they look after themselves. I think it's less about them being tired, inverted commas, but it's more about keeping the squad happy. You've got big squads and you don't want people sulking around the place and bringing the mood down. You also want to make sure, another, the big thing is making sure people are kept sharp through game time. And that's, you know, that's what Lambert's saying, is you don't want someone playing, hardly playing, and then having to come in from the cold. So that would be his argument for it. But I would like to see a more settled side, yeah.
Right, with that, I'm going to call time on Mailbag this week with just one more question from James Gulk, who says, last week, former Blue Jay Tab was at my rugby game in Redditch. Turns out his brother plays for my team. Of course, Jay Tab is a rugby player now. Where have you seen Ipswich players out of context? I once saw, and he's not a player, but I once saw George Burley enjoying Colchester Zoo.
Oh, well, you know, he was a player, though, wasn't he?
But he was a player. He wasn't at the time.
Yeah, of course.
I'm not that old.
What was he looking at?
I think he was looking at the meerkats, and quite frankly, he wouldn't look at the meerkats.
Had he crawled underneath and gone up? Was this at the time where you could, you know, the thing little head up in the, dome?
Yeah, I don't think he was that into it. No. But he was certainly taking interest in said meerkats. Any other, can you think of any examples where you've seen town players? You think,
I too have seen George Burley, but this was more in a nightclub setting.
Yeah.
And he looked like he was enjoying himself.
Good on you, George. You must have seen some town players out of context, Roscoe.
Possibly, but I can't name them.
Do you know who I think I saw at Marco Polo Airport in Venice? Who walked past us.
You think you saw?
I think I saw, because he walked past me and I looked up and thought, that's... and then he walked back and I never saw him again. I couldn't find him. Carl Weathers, the guy who played Apollo Creed.
Okay. Ah, okay.
There was a guy who walked... You know when you get an air from people that they're kind of a big deal, they're important, they've got expensive looking stuff on their back and... They look kind of different, don't they? They look like they've been manicured or, you know, they just look better, basically. And I looked up and I thought, yeah. And then I immediately said to Liz, I think that's Carl Weathers. She went, who? And I went, what? Apollo Creed? Come on. And then she said something like, get a life. And I could not find him again to confirm it. Because obviously, if so, I'd have gone for the selfie big time. Apollo Creed, one of the greatest film creations of all time. Anyway, so the here endeth mailbag. Carl Weathers, if you do listen, you were in Venice Airport, do let us know. Just want to give a shout out to Seasider 28 UK, Steve Lewis, Daryl. That's D Jones Jack's friend of the show, number one. Sorry, we never got to your question. Steve Wallace, Christian Davis, Ross Wishart, Matt Polly, Barry RTFC Man. And I think that's it. Thanks for your questions, but sorry we couldn't get to them because we've got a little time limit. We've still got to finish the paper for tomorrow. Boys, mailbag's ticked off. Let's talk about Southend. They got tonked 7-1 by Doncaster at home on Tuesday night. So, in a way, kind of a team you'd quite fancy playing this weekend. But, of course, they've got a new manager, Sol Campbell. They've got a town icon in Big Herm sitting in that dugout as well. So, what do we make of this game, which is definitely the biggest game that Town have played since the last game they played? How important is this game for Town? Have they got to win it? If they win it 1-0, is that a sign they're still not doing very well? Will fans expect a 5-0 humping? So many questions.
I don't care how they win, but yeah. They need to win. I'll take a 1-0 right now. Is it a game they have to win? It's a 10-day break after this because of the Bury free weekend. So they really could do without sort of going into that, dwelling on three bad performances in a row. And I think what this last week has done has made me realise how fragile the so good feel good factor is. I don't think anyone's getting carried away or saying anything too bad, but a few people getting the wobbles a little bit, and that's understandable. The Ipswich Town fans have got this kind of inbuilt cynicism in them that's been built up over years. Last year they were repeatedly kicked in the balls. A couple of years before that was just a build up of apathy over time. And so it's become a bit of a running joke that, oh, we're on TV, we'll lose. Oh, we're in the first round of the cup, we'll lose. New manager syndrome, we'll lose. Or if somebody's on a particularly bad run, or if you play Ipswich, that's when it will end. So all that sort of stuff is inbuilt into Ipswich, and it was always probably going to take more than 11 games to kind of blow all of that away. So it does feel quite big without overplaying it. And I think they'll be okay. I really do, because yes, it's a new manager, and yes, Sol Campbell did remarkably well to turn things around at Macclesfield last year.
Yeah.
But that's a hell of a lot of work to do in a matter of days, and it's still the same players that have been shipping goals for fun. They've conceded more goals than Bolton. They've got less points than Bolton, and we've been talking about how shambolic the situation was at Bolton. So Ipswich should win, and I think they will.
Excellent. Roscoe, are you worried about Southend?
Yes and no. I think I do fear the new manager coming in, Sol Campbell. I think, all eyes will be on him, possibly, but losing 7-1 at home is... He's only had a few days to rally these troops and...
There's only so much you can do.
During those days. So, as Stu was saying, we've got now 10-day break, so we are needing to get this win because we don't want to go into this break with three games with defeat.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go for a win.
Okay.
2-0 win.
2-0?
Yeah.
What are you saying win-wise?
You want a score prediction?
Of course.
I'm going to say 1-0.
Ooh.
Going back to the 1-0s, because I think they'll just try and play this very sensibly back to basics and do what they need to do.
I'm saying 4-0 Town, because I'm an idiot.
Well, you can see the 7.
So, two things I want to mention before we get to the Archant advert tease that we've got to play. First of all, we received a present in the office this week. Now, we are very much open to gifts, bribes, praise, anything you want to give us. But this was fantastic. We got four coasters from a guy who puts stuff together from Glory Days Artwork. The guy's name is Brad. You've probably seen him on Twitter. Lambert's bought one of his pictures. He does some really good kind of, how would you describe his style? Kind of Roy of the Rovers style. So have a look on my Twitter to have a look at these. We've got three town-related ones and one KOA-related one, which is just Lambert and the words Honey Badger underneath. Lambert going mental at Norwich City last season. They're really, really good. And I'm hoping that the Honey Badger one's going to go into mass production and will be this year's Christmas number one seller. I can see it happening. So thank you very much, Brad. As I say, check out his social media, Glory Days Artwork on Twitter, and I think he's on Instagram as well. Some really good stuff he does. He doesn't just do football stuff, he does like pop culture stuff as well. I noticed he'd done like Oasis album covers and things like that. Really good stuff. And thanks very much for free stuff. Anyone else want to send us free stuff? Obviously, if it's good, I'll take it. Ross will take any free stuff.
Yeah.
Free food especially.
Yeah.
He'll take that.
Hit me up.
And the other thing I want to mention is, of course, I've totally forgotten. What was it? Ah, that's what it was. The Ladies Derby on Sunday. Ipswich Town Ladies play Norwich City Ladies in the FA Cup. This time it's for real.
It is.
It's personal. And we're going to whip them Canary Girls. And it's at the Gold Star Ground in Felixstowe. Yep. What time's kickoff?
2 p.m.
2 p.m. Get down there. Watch Town turn over Norwich.
Yeah.
Is £1.50 is it to get in?
So free entry for season ticket holders, Ipswich Town. £3 for adults, £1 for concessions, and under 16, you're getting for free.
There you go. Get on it. We're going to smash them, aren't we?
Hopefully.
No, we are.
Yeah, okay, we are.
Come on.
Yeah, we can smash them.
Town are good this season.
Yeah.
Those tractor girls, they're top of the league, aren't they? Or second?
Second, yeah.
Yeah, brilliant.
Well, basically, we are.
Get down there, support the girls. Hopefully a big crowd.
Yep.
Watch them destroy Norwich City. You won't get a chance to see that in the men's game for at least another season. Ross, we've got to play this Archon advert.
Boom, boom, boom.
Make a cup of tea in 15
from
seconds.
From true crime
or so.
To football, Brexit to folklore. For more great podcasts from Archon, head to audioboom.com/channel/Archon.
Get on that. If you love folklore, get on an Archon podcast. Yeah, please do listen in. But of course, as I always say, if you've enjoyed this nonsense we put together, hit subscribe on your various podcast providers and leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. We've had a few of those recently. I enjoy all of them. They're fantastic for us in terms of visibility in the charts. We're still in the, I think, the top 25 soccer podcasts in the UK on the iTunes chart, which is brilliant. And that very much helps us. So leave us a 5-star review. We very much appreciate them. And I very much appreciate them personally because of my ego. Boys, I think it's been a good one today. Mm-hmm. We've got to get back to the office and put together the paper for tomorrow. Anything else to mention before we take our leave?
No other business.
I just want to give a shout out to Thomas Seggins, who's driving me to Southend tomorrow.
Good lad, Thomas. You've got yourself a personal driver as well.
Yeah,
has he got a Scarlet Lady like the boys have got?
No, I don't know. I don't know his car yet, so I'll let you know.
We will find out. Thank you, Thomas, for shipping Ross around. Thanks very much for joining us, and we'll talk to you again next week when HMS Piss the League is sailing once again.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.